Good evening. We have come to the third precept. Which is always a troubling one for people. Most of them are, and this is one of them that's most troubling for some people. It's sexuality is such a big question in our culture and has so many parameters of what's proper and what's not proper, and it's changed so much in a couple of lifetimes. It's morphed into something completely different from how it was when I grew up. The question of chastity, I guess, is what we would call this proper sexual conduct, or non-harming or wholesome. That's the sort of primary meaning of this third precept. What it's pointing out, though, is the difference between what has long ago been pointed out as the difference between eros and agape, between lust, you could say, just sheer bodily enjoyment, and compassionate love. Something like that. That there are two ways that we have relationships, physical relationships, with each other. Primarily, that's what this looks like, this third precept. But of course, the Bodhidharma view goes way beyond the physical and points out that it's really about attachment, and that we project onto others and create attachments to others that are unreal. And that in this unreality that we create lots and lots of trouble for ourselves and for others. It isn't saying that there's anything wrong with physical attachment as long as it's not clinging, is what Buddha would say. In the monastery, of course, it's about completely closing off that door. But that's a vow that one takes. That's a vow that is part of the many, many monastic vows. When the deep pleasures of life, physical and otherwise, are given up for the sake of practicing Dharma in another way from the way that we practice it as householders. But as householders, we can understand it more deeply through the Bodhidharma way of realizing the attachment that we paste onto others that, as Koban said, only belongs in one place. That, and we can't name that place. That's the big place, the big mind, you could say. That our real devotion, our real passion is, and our our fulfillment lies in seeing the other through, you could say, the absolute. So that our lovers are our Buddha. And when Buddha and Buddha come together, that in itself is enlightenment, a kind of enlightenment. So in a way, this is as least as a profound as all the others, in terms of self and other, in terms of relationship. It's directly about this. So I was hoping that you all had a chance to think about this over the week. And have something to say about it. How it is for you. Some of us have partners, some of us don't. All of us have attachments. All of us have desires. How do we live with this? This body-mind that we are. That is so delicious and so troubling and so complex that it's important for us to really attend to it, pay attention to it, and know what we're doing. Translation, Koban called this no attaching to fulfillment. So that's what it's about. Of your own desire. And there's no attaching, so it's not no desire. Freely giving.
But you kind of don't know until you go there, right?
Yes. Yes, in a sense.
I'm saying that one should go there, but if there's a desire, you go and see, and you see what happens.
Yeah, but there are two ways of going there, and one is unconscious, and the other is wide awake. Yeah.
In a way, you deal with that way in everything.
Yes. Exactly. So it's not just about what it looks like. It's about everything. How to be with everything.
I liked your few words you said at the end of last week, and I finally understood it was precept was about, well, for now,
yeah,
about attachment and wanting, just wanting, and you had said that there are songs about it and movies, and like the last week I started paying attention more closely to this stuff, like, that I liked, and I'm like, oh my god, it's like following, it's like this, like, it's stressful, the, what we think of, like, falling in love is thought of, or loving somebody, and the angst, and the breaking up, and the, all that stuff, and there's so much pain.
Yeah.
It's all about the attachment.
It is.
It's not really about love, it's about the wanting.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to the words of the songs, and you watch the movies,
yes,
that people want so badly, and I don't want to lose you, but there's nothing to be lost, and there's nothing to be, or I want. That's my girl, or my man, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, like, jealousy, and there's, like, all this stuff when you think you think it's yours, because it can't possibly be yours.
Yes.
That attaching to it.
Yes.
But it could be anything, but it's really pervasive in our culture, because we think it's a wholesome thing, loving.
Yes.
And, like, oh, that's so sad that you broke up, but it's usually not about that. It's usually, like, anger,
yeah,
that you don't want me.
Yes.
It's like, you don't want me anymore, and I'm listening to songs like, he doesn't want me anymore. And I'm like, oh my god. it's this constant, like, yeah, you want things, and you want things or people to want you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you can't get out of it if you stay there.
It's true. You can work yourself into a corner that way.
Yeah, I mean, I've done it.
Yeah. Yeah, we all have.
Yeah, and we take it all personally.
Mm.
My whole perspective of the world has changed. Mm-hmm. I've done these precepts so many times, I'm like, oh my gosh. And it could be wanting, I mean, I'm single, it could be wanting a partner, wanting a family, wanting a child, wanting anything that you think that you're supposed to have. And
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that's passed on to us.
Yes.
Our parents who want the best for us.
Yes, and expect it too, because it's built into the system. So it's all our conditioning as well. We're conditioned to want those things. And it's important to examine them very closely to see if they're our wants or somebody has told us that that's what we're supposed to want. Because often it's just been imposed on us blindly, and we accept it blindly. And it's on every billboard, it's on all the music, in the movies. It's great, really. It's really wonderful. It's so romantic. But it's not realistic. And the suffering that underlies it is so painful that it's well to take the backward step from that, to wake up, to how our mind and body are working, and take good care of them.
That letting go is super scary.
It is scary.
There's some comfort in it.
Yes. Yeah.
Stepping back.
Stepping.
Running towards.
Exactly. Yeah.
Trust.
Make some space. There's lots of space. It's very refreshing. Wendy?
Well, what came up for me was going way back to the 60s and 70s when people were experimenting with open relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And it all made sense intellectually.
Yes.
Nobody owned anybody.
Yes.
It was super hard to do it emotionally.
Oh, it was terrible. I didn't know anybody who succeeded in doing that. I know it's possible because I know that there are people who succeed in having open marriages. I don't know. Usually it comes to grief on one side or the other.
Yes. It's
very difficult. Yeah. Sounds like a lot of fun.
And well, it's logical, too.
Yes, it is logical.
You don't have a tie to a person. You can't tie them up. You tie up their feelings. There had to be space.
Yeah.
Also amazing how when you train your mind to think in a certain way how things work out. A couple of years ago there's a show on TV about polygamous, the one man and four or five wives. Actually it's a show on TV, but I thought
Big Love. Yeah.
Huh.
And
Mormons? Mormons.
Yes. But also there was a show on TV about it. It's like the real thing, not Big Love. And how the women get together and they just bond with all the kids, like 30, 40 kids. And they're so sincere about it.
There have been a couple of books written by women who did not find that a wholesome way of living.
Sure.
So, but some succeed very nicely with it. So
what works? Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. It really isn't about whatever in Tibet, a woman can have a couple of husbands.
Really?
Yeah. That's their tradition. So there are many possibilities. But how we navigate the possibility that we're given is what this is about, not about the actual rules and laws. And they keep changing. They do change. Don?
The words, no attachment, fulfillment for me, gets pretty wide, and it goes from alcohol to cigarettes to sex to those chocolate cookies that I probably shouldn't have, but I'm going to have them anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's like that attachment and that desire and clinging to things that are comfortable. And some things become so comfortable that they become addictions or really terrible, sort of crutches that we have. And sex can be as much of one as drinking or anything else.
Yeah.
So I always felt like the term that I was used to, no attachment to fulfillment, went into many, many areas. And I still, find myself battling that all the time. I'm okay to give up the cigarettes, give up the drinking. Gosh, I'm going to have dessert tonight. And, there's just so much that we attach to and we don't like to let go of it until we're like forced to. And I find that some of it is a real strong dose of self-discipline just to test the water. Like, can I do without this? Can I say no? How much willpower do I have? And that, drinking and smoking and a lot of other things really put people in a predicament a lot of times because they become so used to it. And media and the way society is, you've got to have all these things, the car and the food and the iPhone, all these things all the time are just pressed on you, and you get so comfortable with it that it's like one of the biggest ones that I've seen at home is when there's no internet connection. The family's like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah, it's true.
But I think what Ritu said was was really on the mark. And thank you. I completely agree with that. That was a well said statement of it. And I thought it was seen for this lesson.
It's important not to go too far the other way, though. That if you deprive yourself of that cookie for the rest of your life, not such a good idea. You can work out a kind of balance so that every now and then give yourself a treat of one kind or another. That keeps the whole thing going in a way that isn't a monk-like way, but it's a way to keep us going as we navigate through our life. That all things in moderation.
Even moderation.
Yes. Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, I think self-discipline is not really the way, because that's kind of trying to force things. And so with awareness, if you approach things with awareness.
Yeah.
So if you're aware of what you're, it's kind of like trying to get rid of that wanting. And if you're just wanting to stop.
It's another wanting.
It's a battle that you're going to lose eventually. So it's just being aware of it. Remember, we were talking about the chocolate. And so I had a roommate, and I had chocolate. And then she's like, how do you just, like, leave chocolate around? I'm like, oh, I forget about it. And she's like, how is that possible? I'm like, well, I get it. Because I want to have it. And I'm like, yeah, I move on to something else. But just, like, you know, it will go away by itself. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah. I know.
Forget it. Chocolate is thin.
You just keep it around. Don't depend. Just don't eat the whole thing.
Well, I think for me, that's the, you know, I look at drinking and smoking particularly as really terrible habits, but when I was young, I didn't think were that bad. And then I realized I was addicted to them and I couldn't let go of them. It was really very difficult. And I think food and lots of other things are that way. And it's real easy to get into the comfort zone because it's there and you have it. But sometimes people don't know how to gauge themselves to say no, and they end up, you know, overeating or getting too obsessed about it. And then they can't let go of it. So I think you're right about the, you know, self-discipline has to be careful about it. I think some people lack it entirely and end up, you know, abusing themselves, and their clinging is so bad that it like takes over the whole personality.
That's
really a dangerous thing.
Isn't it just lack of awareness, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
I smoked like a chimney from the age of 18 to 27 or so, 28, probably 10 years, two or three packs a day.
Wow.
I mean, I loved to smoke. I loved it. I loved the fire, you know, making a little fire, sharing a little fire with somebody else, and the smoke going up. Beautiful, always going up, and you hold this thing in your hand, and it's on your mouth. It's so sensuous. And I didn't think anything of it until one night in a raging storm, and we lived up on a hill on a dirt road outside of town. And at midnight, I realized I was out of cigarettes and I wouldn't have any for my coffee in the morning. And I got in the car in my nightgown and drove all the way down to a 7-Eleven to get a pack of cigarettes. And as I was driving back, I thought, this is crazy. This is crazy. I hadn't been aware of it until then. And then it just seemed like I was insane and that this thing owned me. It actually was stronger than I was, that it was making me go and do this crazy thing in the middle of the night. And so it was a revelation. It took me a long time to get through it, to get out of it, because it was such a deep attachment. I had to get the Asian flu, actually, and just be so sick that I couldn't smoke and got over the physical thing. But I know what it's like to be really in the grip of something and not even know it, know we're in it. That's kind of an extreme example, I know, but...
Go to the airports. I used to go traveling, and I had to have a cigarette. I couldn't smoke on the plane, so you'd get off and run to the smoking room in the airport. And there's 25 people packed in a closet, all smoking, just white in your ears. It's horrible. It's like, you know, there'll be 3 hours without a cigarette. I thought they have one, so... I know exactly what you're talking about. It's pretty serious.
But again, it's a cultural thing, too. And I was taught to smoke, mm-hmm. and it was everybody smoked. And Winston and Marlboro's gave you little packages on the campus at school. At they handed them out free. I think you got five little skinny ones. And so everybody smoked. And if you went to Europe and watched a movie in Ireland, you couldn't even see the screen because everybody was smoking in the movies. So it's, we've gotten way past that now, I think, though they still have that room in the airport. Yeah.
Well, I have a home video of my father when he was 5 years old. He turned 95 on Sunday, so this was a long time ago. But it was probably in the 20s. He was five, and his father and his mother, my grandparents, smoked constantly. They had these big, long things that they put the cigarettes in their head clogs and it was all roaring 20s and stuff. And if you go back and look at it, all they did was smoke and have cocktails. And it just got burned into society.
Mm.
It can be real troublesome for some people to get over that.
Oh, for many people. Many, many. It's pretty real, this stuff, isn't it? Jeffrey?
Well, Eros and Agape. Chocolate chip cookies, cigarette smoking.
That is
I find the whole thing rather interesting. I find the subject of love to be so important. You know, I mean, I'm here because of it. Desire is a very important. We just seems to me you'll a great deal of attention and focus and discussion about it for a practice and for looking inside ourselves. All I know for myself is that much about my own search or practice or looking within has had as its a real important component is trying to understand love, trying to understand love in all of its manifestations, and I think through this practice is that we learn how to set a tone for ourselves in terms of how we would avoid such things as a sexual addiction, because it's very real, and we read about people who seem to have so much at stake, whether it be a Zen teacher or a very well-known Hollywood actor or actress. I mean, people for whom this is terribly painful. To those who have followed this person or know this person and have been influenced or affected by this person in very pernicious and painful ways, talk practice, which really allows us to think about this, to reflect and contemplate it, gives us, I think, 2 feet on the ground, and a place where we can open our heart and so much of my growth has been through the pain of not understanding so many of the things that I did when I was younger. The mistakes, the sense of being hurt by somebody, for example, and really coming to understand some of the delusion was part of that. So I continue to find this discussion for me fruitful, even though at my age, the interest in it has you know, transformed or morphed, or it's different than when I was younger, whether I was going to be fruitful and multiply, which I did.
You did.
Or at another time when I was divorced, what would I do? Is that at one point I thought, maybe I'll become a monk. You know, I thought about that. I mean, so you have different ways of considering what we're talking about tonight, mm-hmm. and learning from it. And I think that it's a huge thing to learn from, because those of us who have our so-called hearts pierced by this discussion and have gone up and down and have experienced maybe some of the most painful memories I have would be around attachment. And so it's the kind of the grist for the mill. Mm-hmm. And it's what my gratitude for this practice is so much that I can reflect on this and actually benefit from these mistakes I made as a young person. And I still continue to make mistakes, but how I've been able to grow from them and mm-hmm. come down to a different understanding about Eros and Agape, and how, you know, love is like so important. It's the expression of my life, I would hope, and how I want that to expand. So when we talk about love, it's like the most important thing I can talk about. How I love the people in this room, how I love the people that I work with and for, how I love my neighbor, how I love things that I'm connected to but I don't know. How I'm to love the unknown, or the things that I'm uncertain about. How I'm to love certain aspects of myself that I don't know about. I still haven't looked at. So, yes, I would say number 3 is a big one. And much more difficult, much more amorphous, much more layered with all kinds of stuff, because we're really talking about all these experiences we've had in our life that bring us to this moment for this discussion. Some of us have had different kinds of experiences to reflect upon and continue to have, because, you know, when reading Stanley Kunitz, and this man in his 90s, and he's talking about Eros still, I'm going, oh my gosh, I still have Eros to deal with by reach my 90s? Oh my goodness. So, I just find the discussion to be fruitful. Thank you so much. Everybody's discussion of it tonight was very helpful. How we branch off and we talk about cigarettes or chocolate cookies or, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, thank you, Jeffrey. It's a good way to end this. Thank you very much. It's a very intimate subject, of course, and it's a little bit hard to talk about each time, so I congratulate us. I think we did really well.